Abduction of Myth, written by Morzila and read by Eos Rose. Life with Dean Winchester wasn't what Lisa had imagined it to be, as far as she had ever imagined it, that is. In truth, she had never gotten that far past the daydreaming of it all, because the logic centers in her brain knew that actually having him was an impossibility. He was like a mythical superhero in her mind. Half sex god and half virtuous defender. His reality couldn't possibly live up to her fantasy of him, even if the sex part was pretty close to being true. But she ignored all her common sense when he showed back up on her doorstep. Really, who wouldn't? A woman would be foolish to turn away a bona fide hero that actually wanted to be the father to her son. And as much as it bugged her to admit her shallowness, Dean's general hotness did make up for some of his faults. Even though she hadn't spent all that much time around Dean, she was kind of in love with him. Plus, the guy was clearly broken beyond words, and that just plain pulled at her heartstrings in all the right ways. The bad boy vibe still called to her youth, and the injured soul tugged equally as hard at her mother's heart. Lisa wasn't a stupid woman. She knew that there would be issues, and given what little she did know about Dean's life, she prepared herself the best way that she knew how. She went and bought a book on post-traumatic stress disorder, and did as much research on the problems of soldiers adapting back into normal life as she possibly could. It wasn't a perfect fit, but she figured that there wasn't going to be a book out there on how to handle a post-apocalyptic demon hunter's reintegration into normal society unless she ended up writing it. What she didn't count on was that Dean was the most contrary bastard to ever have been born. The first week, he alternated between saying nothing and then suddenly bursting into tears. Although bursting might be the wrong word, it was more like his eyes would just start leaking while his face stayed in whatever expression it had been in moments before. The only time that he snapped out of his funk was when Ben was around. It was like a switch got thrown inside, and Dean would become alive and animated. It was creepy to see the sudden change, and disturbing to see the light just snuff itself out the instant that Ben was gone. It was, Lisa learned, a skill that Dean's life had taught him. He just kept getting up and moving, and what kept him moving was being helpful to somebody else. The man simply had no concept of selfishness. Sure, he had no compunction about grabbing the last of the morning coffee, or the last donut, or stealing the first shower, but true self-centered motivations appeared to be a completely foreign concept to him. At the end of the first week, Dean drove Ben over to a friend's house because Ben wanted to show up there in the cool car. Dean brought back a pizza on the way because somehow he'd seen in her eyes that she was too tired to cook for them, and Dean admitted that he had very limited skills in the kitchen. She'd cracked open a beer for each of them and looked around just in time to see the color drain from Dean's face. From the way he looked, she'd been ready to run for the duffel bag of weaponry that he had stashed in her bedroom closet. But he assured her that they'd just gotten his order wrong. He'd smiled to reinforce his claim, but his eyes started that weird leaking thing again, and his smile was brittle. "Dean?" she'd asked, because there simply wasn't any way that she could even pretend not to see it.
"Sammy's gone," was all he said in response. No explanation, no exposition like the pizza parlor had managed to make Sam's favorite kind of pizza or anything like that. Just, "Sammy's gone."
Well, that and a keening wail right before he put his fist through the kitchen wall. He broke a finger doing that, but refused to go to the doctor. When Lisa insisted, he grunted and explained that he couldn't very well go to the doctor to get his bone fixed, because he was legally dead, and even if he wasn't, he'd be wanted by the feds. That wasn't what Lisa had ever thought he was going to say, but it gave her enough to think about while Dean went into her bedroom to retrieve his first aid kit and set his own finger in a splint.
She could honestly say that seeing him do that was one of the freakiest things she'd ever seen. Not as bad as having her own son replaced with an evil, life-sucking changeling, but pretty freaky nonetheless. Dean refused to say another word on the "Sammy's gone" comment, but did manage to explain to her that he really couldn't go to the hospital because he technically died in a fiery explosion months ago. When he mentioned something about identity theft and how he wasn't going to do that in her hometown, she finally conceded the point. It was a discussion that put a whole lot of things in perspective. Lisa was a bright enough light bulb to figure out that dead men can't work, and they certainly can't get married. There was the option of fake identification, and it seemed that Dean fully intended to pursue that, but there were going to be issues there as well. Enough people in town knew him and his real name. Certainly all of Ben's friends knew the hero that was Dean Winchester, and Lisa had done a bit of bragging to her friends as well. That basically handicapped Dean's chances of getting a really good set of fake identification papers. They were, as he put it, damned lucky that nobody had ever figured out that Lisa's Dean Winchester was the same one that was wanted by the federal government. For all that, Lisa encouraged him to stay, and to her utter amazement, he did. He took Ben to practice and watched him play all his sports. Dean started fixing Mrs. Gordon's backyard fence in exchange for cooking lessons. He tuned up Lisa's car. He painted Mr. Elder's house for cash. He mowed lawns. He shoveled driveways, and when Ben freaked out on her one day about how he was just one big mistake that she probably regretted, Dean was the one who took him aside and explained the facts of life to her son. Of course, those facts of life seemed to involve a demon, ceiling fires, and somebody called Chuck. But Ben wouldn't tell Lisa anything more than that, and Dean was a damn sphinx when it came to discussing anything that he wasn't of a mind to discuss. There were oddities in Dean's behavior, just like anybody else's. When he redid the trim on the house, he spent ages on the internet looking at the chemical compositions of different paints. When he finally settled on one, he brought home gallons of the stuff, empty buckets, and more salt than she'd ever seen. Her trim ended up sparkling. She would have complained, except for the fact that so did Dean, and it was the first time that he'd smiled since he'd shown back up on her doorstep. He stripped and varnished her floors without her even hinting about it. Just up and did it one weekend when she was a parent volunteer on a field trip that Ben's class was taking. It was sweet and thoughtful, so she didn't mention that the coating wasn't quite even. When the light hit the entryways at certain angles, it looked like there were symbols in a circle. She figured that he'd tried to put down extra varnish in high-traffic areas, but ran out and tried to be artsy instead. Dean was incredibly antisocial, and she tried to understand that. Ben certainly did. He never said a word when Dean hid in the shadow of a tree instead of sitting up on the bleachers like Lisa and the other parents did, and he didn't whine when Dean sat in the far back of the school theater to watch the school play, instead of sitting right up front with a video camera. Lisa sometimes wondered if her son was a better person than she was, because it bugged her when Dean didn't want to go out at night with her. It wasn't that he ever refused, but when they went out to eat, he'd sit with his back against the wall and give these half-aborted grins at the waitress that just looked painful. She thought that maybe it was just her. As far as she could tell, this was Dean's first long-term relationship. He had to have been feeling out of his depth with having to continue to find new topics of information. So she took him out on a double date with her friend Sally and her husband John. They went to a nice country bar on the outskirts of town that served all-you-can-eat ribs and chicken on Friday nights. They had a great time while John told story after story about his dart league and his championship pool trophy. Granted, Dean's amusement seemed a bit more sarcastic in nature, but Lisa had just been relieved to see him look relaxed. It hadn't occurred to her at the time that it wasn't the company they were with. She had honestly thought that Dean had just hit it off with John and Sally. They went out on a few more couples' dates together, and she could have sworn that Dean was getting more relaxed. She wasn't stupid enough to think that he was fixed by any means, but he was better. That was when all hell broke loose. Or not, as Ben told her that technically hell broke loose, like, ages ago, but that Sam Winchester put the devil back in the box, so it was all okay now. Which was a concern about what movies Dean was letting Ben watch, but she figured that was a conversation she could put off for a little while at least. Sally had called and cajoled them into celebrating John's new promotion, so they'd gone out to what Lisa was starting to think of as their place. It wasn't Friday, but that was okay because Dean had developed a fascination with the Raspberry Inferno chicken wings. He could finish the 5-pound platter all by himself, and there were times that his eyes would glaze over when he took his first bite. It was the same expression that Dean got when you finally let his erection out of his jeans. Not that Lisa had seen much of that since he'd shown up again. Whatever had happened was bad enough to put a serious dent in Dean's libido. Truthfully, Lisa was a bit jealous of the damn chicken wings. In any case, they'd been having a good time. Sally had been talking about getting a new car, John about getting a new set of golf clubs, and Dean had been giving oral sex to his chicken wings. Then John had offhandedly mentioned something about how he was going to be able to send Samantha off to Stanford after all. That extra income was going to push her college fund right up to where it needed to be. Dean had choked a little during the announcement, but had seemed fine as he washed the stray chicken down with the last of his beer. He'd shot a weak grin in their direction and made vague go-ahead gestures with his hands as he flagged down the waitress to order another drink. Lisa had smiled and expressed her happiness for them and asked if Sammy knew what she was going to study out there. She didn't hear Dean change his order from beer to whiskey when Sally said that Sammy wanted to be a lawyer. She also didn't notice that Dean didn't finish his chicken wings, or that he did finish off a few too many drinks. What she did notice was that somewhere in between discussing gardening tips for roses and what kind of car Sally should buy with John's new promotion money, Dean excused himself to go to the bathroom and never came back. After waiting for another 15 minutes, John volunteered to go find him. 30 minutes after that, a chagrined John wandered back to the table with Dean in tow. Dean was sporting a very nice watch on his wrist, a red silk tie around his neck, and an eel-skin wallet was swinging from his fingers. He was grinning like a lunatic, and there was no doubt in anybody's mind that he was plastered. He also had managed to beat John at darts with one eye closed and his good hand tied behind his back. He gave everything back, but Sally wouldn't speak to Lisa for a month. John called the next day and asked if Dean wanted to join the dart league. It was their first fight. Or more directly, it was the first time that Lisa yelled and swore at Dean while he just sort of stared at her blankly. He didn't get upset. He didn't try to defend himself. He just looked at her like he had no idea why she was so upset with him. After a while, she'd just given up. Her neighbor growing up had a dog that had looked at her that way. But poor Mr. Snorkels had almost been drowned as a puppy and was a bit slow in the head. Dean didn't have that excuse. Thinking of Mr. Snorkels reminded Lisa that even though Dean didn't seem to get it, she could at least punish him. So she banned him from sleeping in the bedroom. He didn't sleep on the couch. No. When she went to go fetch him for breakfast the next morning, she found him curled up in the passenger seat of his car, face pressed against the leather, fingers twisted around the seatbelt. He wouldn't look at her when he got out of the car, but she saw him rub at his cheeks as he followed her into the house. It was what Ben did after he'd been crying, and somehow she knew right then and there that Dean was never going to tell her what was really wrong. Dean Winchester was a big, fat loser. He'd first been told this by a certain Walter Williams in second grade. Walter ended up with a big fat smiley face on the back of his shirt, courtesy of Dean's limited artistic skills and the blueberry-scented magic marker that the school provided for underprivileged students like Dean, who couldn't afford their own art supplies. Still, Walter was kind of right. Dean couldn't hold on to anything he wanted worth shit, so there was one level of losing right there. Then there was the whole not being able to keep his promise to his not-dead, but being tortured for eternity, brother. Find Lisa. Apple pie life. It looked like a pretty solid plan as far as their plans ever went. It was certainly better than their apocalypse-stopping ones, and those had eventually worked, sort of. If you didn't count the whole part where both of Dean's brothers were currently trapped in hell, for all eternity, being angel condoms. On his best days, Dean likes to console himself with the fact that he at least hadn't broken his promise to Sam about getting him out of the eternal clink of damnation. On his worst days, Dean likes to castigate himself that he should have found a way around his promise to Sam, or found another way to get the devil in the box, or found a way to get Satan to jump Adam's bones instead of Sam's. And yeah, that last thought, it always makes him feel as shitty as it sounds. But the fact is that he didn't do any of that because he is a loser. He is also crap at having meaningful relationships with women, and he knows that is all his fault. Lisa is a great person. She's a great mom. She's a great employee. She's just great. Dean is. Well, he's just totally out of his depth. He would have found a way to just end it all months ago, except for the fact that he knew where he was headed when he died. And living eternity without Sam was going to be a lot different than knowing that he was going to spend eternity without Sam. Yeah, he'd get to relive his memories, but it wouldn't be the same. Someday in the future, when he's lived enough years without, maybe reliving physical, tangible memories of Sam will be worth it. Right now, though, he knows that he wouldn't be able to enjoy the trees for the fact that he knows there isn't going to be any damn forest. Oh God, he probably shouldn't have drunk that last wine cooler if he's starting to think in metaphors. That was always Sam's job, and thinking anything remotely Sam-related always seems to get him sleeping in the Impala overnight. And fuck, wine coolers? He's a pathetic bunch of mush because he volunteered to man the barbecue at the animal shelter picnic. And he started in on the wine coolers because he fucking knows that Lisa is watching to make sure he doesn't have too many beers. Dean Winchester, though, doesn't drink girly shit like wine coolers, so he can easily hide the fact that he's been imbibing by leaving half-drunk ones all over the place. Middle-class women seem to have some sort of code that doesn't actually allow them to finish their drink, so his bottles blend in easily with their own. Maybe that wasn't what John Winchester had in mind when he taught Dean how to pickpocket and replace evidence, but somehow Dean can't really bring himself to care about that. He doesn't think that his father meant to train his sons to be neurotic enough to damn near end the world over each other either, but it happened. Of course, John Winchester did manage to teach Dean how to be a good parent in a way. His father's unusual parenting technique had forced Dean to practically raise Sam. And while he's pretty sure that means that some of Sam's psychological issues can be laid directly at his feet, the fact remains that Sam actually beat off Lucifer and saved the world. On the whole, Dean thinks you'd call his brother a hero. With the sink-or-swim parenting lessons of the past, Dean thinks he does an okay job of being a substitute dad to Ben. Lisa's friends seem to think so, and Mrs. Rubin said that Ben's overall grades had improved since Dean had moved in with them. So he's going to chalk that one up to a win and let it be. That's what apple pie people do, right? And apple pie people totally get dogs, which is exactly what he told Lisa when his dog followed him home from the grocery store 3 weeks ago. It had been nice out, and all they'd needed was a thing of sour cream for the baked potatoes, so Dean had walked to the convenience store down the street to buy the overpriced stuff they had on hand, instead of driving all the way over to the grocery store. He was in the process of walking back when he glanced down at the sidewalk to kick a stray rock out of the way and saw a big shadow behind him. He had dropped the sack and gone for the silver knife he still always kept on him, only to spin around and see this behemoth of a dog standing there. It was really freaking tall and gray in color. Its fur was short but not smooth, wiry and coarse, and sticking out in random patterns. One ear was sticking straight up in the air and the other kind of flopped over. And if Dean hadn't seen its sides moving, he would have sworn that the dog wasn't even breathing because it wasn't making a sound. He'd made shooing motions at it. He spilled his spare vial of holy water over it. He made loud, ungodly noises at it. He smeared some sour cream on the blade of the knife so that the dog would lick it off. Nothing made the dog go away. But Dean was reasonably assured that, despite its sudden appearance and odd silence, it wasn't some sort of hellhound real dog crossbreed. If he was a lesser man, he'd be disturbed that he even thought that such a thing was possible, but he'd seen way too much in his life to not at least entertain the idea. Of course, by the time that he'd tested the dog and determined that his fate was finally going to be nice to him, Dean was running late for supper. Dean didn't exactly like being late for supper, as food was one of the few pleasures left that he actually enjoyed, so he ran the rest of the way home. His new buddy kept up with ease, and Dean quickly decided that he was the best dog ever. Lisa hadn't been as impressed with the awesomeness of Dean's new pet, and he'd spent the night in the Impala with his new best friend drooling in the back seat. And the next night, and the night after that. It was around the fourth night that she let Dean back in the house with the stipulation that the dog go in the basement, and that Dean would have to take the dog in for shots and take him on regular walks and go down to the animal shelter to see if the beast had been reported missing. She didn't say anything, but Dean's fairly certain that her acquiescence came more from the fact that she realized that sleeping out in the Impala wasn't really a hardship on him than the fact that she wanted to actually make up. And yeah, makeup sex? Highly overrated. It wasn't bad. He'd just had better. But the sex seemed to make Lisa feel better, and he got what he wanted, and it was kind of cool because he couldn't really remember the last time that he'd gotten something he wanted with so little pain and suffering. He didn't even bleed or have gut-crushing angst for days on end. The vet gave his dog a clean bill of health and gave him some tips on what and how to feed such a large animal. The pet store lady gave him the collar and leash free of charge when he went in and bought the dog bed, dog food, and feeding station from her instead of going to the chain store down the road. When he went to the animal shelter, they were very sure that nobody had come looking for a giant gray dog, but they were more than happy to talk Dean into volunteering now that he had just adopted his first pet. He was giddy enough at the knowledge that his dog was now well and truly his that he agreed. That agreement clearly led to the consumption of several half bottles of wine coolers, which is why he could be excused for not noticing a very familiar ball cap making its way through the crowd. "You look like your dog just died," Bobby said by way of greeting. Dean felt his eyes fly open, and without his volition, they glanced quickly over to where Ben was playing with his dog. "Nah, looks like he's still alive," he responded easily as he turned the cheap hot dogs over on the grill. "Nice kid, nice girl, ugly dog," Bobby noted as he took a sip of Dean's wine cooler. He promptly spit it out on the ground. "What is this?" "Arbor mist. They get better if you eat a Polish right after. Want one?" "I didn't give my $3 to the blind lady manning the table, and I'd hate to take away from a good cause." Dean sighed and dropped the last of his current batch of hot dogs in the warmer next to the grill before turning to actually look at Bobby. "You aren't here for a social visit. You would have called first, and you would have cleaned up if you were coming to meet the family." that what they are now, your family? Coming from anybody else, Dean would have bristled at the question. Hell, coming from Bobby in a slightly different tone, he would have gotten pissed. But there was nothing but fact-finding in his friend's eyes, not judgment or approval. Bobby knew better than anybody alive what the word family meant to Dean. Well, anybody but Sam, but literally only God knew what sort of state Sam was in at this point. There, I promised Sam, Dean finally said as he turned and put on some burgers when the lady taking the orders motioned at him. And the dog? Is mine. Figured, he's got that stupid, stubborn look about him that Winchesters have. You going to tell me why you're here, or are you going to keep insulting my dog? I've got a hunch you might be interested in. Dean turned around and stared at Bobby with incredulous eyes. He opened his mouth to spew, he didn't know what, something mean and nasty, but Bobby held up a hand to forestall him. I know that you promised Sam, and I know you're trying real hard to make this whole Normer thing work, but I also know that you'd kick my ass if I did this alone and didn't tell you about it. Yeah, I'm listening. Maybe we shouldn't discuss this here, Bobby hedged as he glanced around. So you'd rather have this conversation back home, where young, still somewhat innocent ears can hear, and my nagging girlfriend can put her 2 cents worth in? Dean asked as he flipped the burger that he was cooking. All this domesticity has made you ornery. Bobby, you're stalling. Whatever it is, just spit it out. 'Cause this diplomatic thing you're trying, it's creeping me out. Jessica Moore's body went missing about a week ago. The groundskeeper was mowing the lawn when he came across a real big mound of dirt, a hole, and one very empty casket. Dean didn't respond, but turned to flip the burgers off the grill and onto the cheap buns that they were serving them on. He walked them over to the serving lady and walked slowly back to the grill to face Bobby. Problem was, he wasn't sure exactly what it was that he wanted to say. They're calling it a grave robbery. I'm guessing she didn't have a Lazarus pulled on her like you did, but it's pretty suspicious. Bobby continued, as if Dean hadn't just walked away from a pretty important topic of information. Yeah, and given Sam's involvement with her and our rap sheets having grave desecration listed on them, this could turn ugly. Dean outlined the problem in a flat voice, because they both knew that the involvement of the federal government was the least of their concerns. But he didn't really want to say what the other issues might be. Plus, if the feds did start nosing around, it could bring all sorts of trouble down on Lisa's head. Bobby shrugged and scratched at the back of his hand. Didn't want to have to come right out and say it, but yeah. The tone of his voice let Dean know that Bobby was acknowledging all of the unspoken dangers that Dean hadn't mentioned. A few months of normal life hasn't made my brains leak out, Dean snapped. You want some time to think about it? Bobby asked, clearly ignoring Dean's attitude. It was on the tip of his tongue to say no. Why would he need time to think about it? It was pretty damn clear to him that he needed to be involved. Then he noticed that Bobby's gaze was settled on Lisa and her group of friends. Dean shifted uncomfortably for a minute before saying, I guess maybe I should talk to Lisa first about it. Reckon so. You want to come over tonight? We've got a guest bedroom thingy in the basement. You sure that she's going to want me to stay over? I'm not here to make trouble in your life, Dean, and normal women don't just jump at the idea of some old scrap dealer dragging their lover off to certain danger. Yeah? Well, you're my family, so if she has a problem with that, she can just deal with it. Dean snarled as he slapped another burger on the grill. He could feel Bobby stare at the back of his head for a long while, and he braced himself for the inevitable questions about how things were going. But all Bobby said was, I suppose so. Dean tried not to be disappointed with that. Bobby, after all, wasn't Sam. Lisa tried not to cry when Dean explained the situation to her. Actually, she tried not to cry when Bobby Singer explained it to her, because Dean didn't really fill in much of the details. Details like who Jessica Moore was and why it was important that they go find out what happened to her body. Listening to Bobby give the abbreviated version of why it was important was bad enough. She'd known that there were things about Dean's life that she didn't know. That was normal with any relationship as short as theirs had been. Given what she did know about his job before he came to live with her, she'd been able to at least fill in some of the blanks for herself. That Dean's mother had been burned alive on the ceiling of their house and that Sam's girlfriend had died the same way? Those were the sort of things that she wouldn't have thought. Lisa had never given any deep thought to how Dean had gotten into the whole hunting thing, and the only information that he had given her was that his father had taught him. It turned out that Dean was much more of a master of understatement than Lisa had realized. Dean had stalked out to supposedly take his dog for a walk, sometime around Bobby's brief description of how Dean had gone to take Sam away from Stanford when Jess was killed. Lisa wasn't surprised by the action, and from the lack of surprise on Bobby's face, she guessed he wasn't either. "Bobby," she said once the front door shut, and she was certain that Dean was on his way down the block. "What happened to Sam?" The color drained out of Bobby's face, and his eyes darted down to the tops of his dusty leather boots.
"Dean didn't tell you?" he asked in a subdued voice.
"Just that he's gone, but Dean hasn't been... He won't talk about it, and I'm worried. If whatever is going on has something to do with what happened to Sam, I'm not sure that it would be good for Dean."
"I can't say that it'll be healthy for him, but I can tell you that there is nothing that'll keep that boy away from this one. He might get hurt doing this. Hell, I'd be surprised if he didn't. But he'll die if he doesn't do it. It isn't my place to share Dean's pain without his say-so, but I can tell you that as long as it has some tie to Sam, he's going to go."
"Because of what happened to Sam?" Bobby smirked a little at that.
"No, it's just always been that way with him. He's been that way ever since I knew him, and I've known that boy a real long time."
Lisa pursed her lips and gave a watery sigh. "I don't like this. When he showed up at my door, the last two times he came back to me, he's been broken. What if this just breaks him beyond repair? What if he can't find his way back?" Bobby leveled a stern glare at her and held it for a long moment before opening his mouth to reply.
"This isn't a fairy tale, and Dean Winchester isn't Humpty Dumpty. He breaks. He mends. And no matter how much you might want it otherwise, he is always going to feel the need to be a goddamn hero. It's best you know that now."
Lisa felt a twin rush of embarrassment and anger flood her cheeks. "I know who Dean is, and I have a right to worry about the man that is my son's father. They might not be blood related, but he's Ben's whole world."
"I'm not saying you don't have a right to be worried. I'd be a bit ashamed of you if you weren't. But if you really knew Dean, you'd know that he'd drag himself back here bloody and half dead."
"Because he's a hero, I know."
"Because he promised Sam," Bobby corrected.
Lisa found that she didn't quite know what to say to that, so she didn't say anything at all.
Dean grumbled under his breath as he dutifully followed Bobby's truck into the Wayside Rest parking lot. They didn't need to be stopping quite so much. It was slowing them down.
"You got an enlarged prostate or something, Bobby?"
Dean called as he climbed out of the car.
"Just figured we could stretch our legs a bit. The trail is going to be cold when we get there anyway."
"Stretch our... Bobby, I grew up in that car. If you think a couple of months' worth of domestic life has made me incapable of driving, you're clearly getting Alzheimer's or something."
"Not you, you idiot. The dog. They love car rides, but they need to stretch every once in a while. And for the record, nearly a year is not just a couple of months."
"Oh."
Dean mumbled as he looked at the ground. He hadn't really thought about that while he was packing to go. The dog dishes and the extra kibble, sure, but he'd been preoccupied with getting out to Jess's grave and promising Ben that he'd be back as soon as possible with stories and candy and with avoiding Lisa's gaze entirely. He'd taken the dog on a crazy impulse. It had just felt wrong to leave him there. Shuffling back to the Impala, Dean grabbed the leash out of the glove compartment and opened the back door to clip it onto his dog's collar.
You ever going to name him? Can't rightly keep calling him the dog the rest of his life,
Bobby commented as he came up alongside them and scratched behind the dog's one upright ear. Dean shrugged and walked over towards some bushes so that his dog could sniff and mark his territory, so that some fluffy poodle could come by later and do the exact same thing.
Ben and I were trying to come up with some names, but we weren't having the best of luck with it. I thought about naming him after, well, Sam, because he's so big. But I think it's kind of tacky.
Bobby just grunted in response, and Dean breathed a sigh of relief. It was nice to be able to mention something about Sam without getting the "Do you want to talk about it?" line, or the profound gaze of sympathy. They walked in silence for a while before Dean opened his mouth again.
I'm not sure I'm cut out for this serious relationship stuff.
Bobby stopped in his tracks and stared at Dean.
What? Wondering if I should go get the holy water and see if you're possessed. Oh, come on. You expect me to believe that you think I'm cut out to be a husband with 2.5 kids? I expect you to never bring up those kinds of conversations without being severely beaten first. And then only when you're so looped up on pain meds that you'd start waxing poetic about how great it is to be a big brother and how pretty the Impala looks in the moonlight.
That happened once. Once! I was 17 and not used to drinking. And for the record, I was really fucking wrong. Being a big brother sucks.
It isn't the big brother part that sucks, son. If it was, you'd be the only one hurting.
There was a part of Dean that really wanted to respond to that with yelling and ranting. There was nobody that could feel the way that Dean did about what happened to Sam. But either Dean had matured, or Lisa had gentled him in some way, because he could still remember the empty bottles at Bobby's place when he'd come back from hell.
So I'm thinking Gigantor. Come again?
Bobby's confusion was plain in his voice.
The dog. You know, it's kind of a tribute, right? You want to name your dog after your brother with a nickname that you used to mock said brother with? You like Sasquatch better? I like a good name better. Dude, you named your dog Rumsfeld,
Dean pointed out.
It was a political statement, Bobby protested. Because you got so many neighbors coming over to visit your junkyard to discuss politics that you never watch?
Bobby sighed.
Fine. How about Moose? It's easier to spell on a license tab, and it's easier to say. I can't name my dog that. It'll hurt his feelings,
Dean protested.
Dean.
Bobby's voice was laden with exasperation. Dean just quirked an unrepentant eyebrow at him.
Come on, Gigantor. We need to get back on the road.
That hunting was different without Sam was no surprise to Dean. He'd done it in the past. What was a surprise was that there wasn't a constant, gut-wrenching pain whenever he turned to talk to his brother, and he wasn't there. That was different from all the other times. Whenever Sam had left, it had always been painful, never been easy. It wasn't easy now, but it was oddly soothing to be on the road, sussing out some evil scheme instead of fixing up the yard or running errands. Dean supposed it was because hunting was what normal was to him. He'd only known differently for the first 4 years of his life, and for the first time he wondered what it was like for new hunters who got into the gig because something horrible had happened to them. His dad and Bobby had been those guys, the ones who had everything and then had it taken away.
Dean was the one living his life in reverse. But it sure didn't feel like that. Not that he'd been untouched by all the months living the normal life. He was, for one thing, more introspective than he used to be, but he still wasn't sure if that was life with Lisa talking, or just life without Sam. His brother had usually been the one to make him look inside, at first because of his pestering emo ways, then because things got so bad that Dean fell into the habit of always checking out his insides to make sure that he wasn't going evil. After all, if Sammy had been weak towards the evil mojo, then Dean might have the same proclivities too, especially after what he had done in hell. Dean had started trying to think of his introspection as the same thing as tuning up the Impala. He had to at least look her over once in a while, even if nothing seemed to be wrong up front. Not that thinking about it that way had really helped him out a whole lot. Turns out that being introspective is not mutually exclusive from suppression and denial, and it just helps you realize that you are repressing and denying something. It doesn't keep you from doing it. Of course, anybody with half a brain and a whisper of the story of Dean's life would be able to guess the general topic of what he was repressing at the moment. He had a whole shitload of stuff inside his head that was labeled Sam in fluorescent orange letters. If he was the type of guy that made excuses for himself, he'd say that he was on this hunt because it would help him deal with his issues about Sam. Dean wasn't that kind of guy, though, and he had the gut feeling that whatever was waiting for him was just going to add to his Sam-related problems, not alleviate them. 5 days into the hunt, he found out that his gut was right. There wasn't much at the gravesite. Neither he nor Bobby had expected there to be. The chat Bobby had with Jess's parents yielded nothing more than another dosage of lingering guilt about their daughter's death. It turned out that they'd seen FBI postings when first Dean and then Sam became wanted men. It turned out that they'd seen FBI postings when first Dean and then Sam became wanted men. Being the intelligent people that they were, they had quickly started blaming them both for killing their little angel. But they knew that Dean and Sam were dead, and now they were worried that they'd misjudged the Winchester brothers. They were convinced that there was some horrible person out there that had pinned all sorts of horrible crimes on the boys, and that they'd just been running from that beast of a nameless person. That person that had framed the Winchester brothers for grave desecration and murder was the same person that had taken their daughter from her final resting place. As far as they were concerned, it fit the pattern nicely. As far as Dean was concerned, they watched too much television. But it was nice to be sort of forgiven. Even though he hadn't done a damn thing to Jess, she had been a pawn in some horrible game that Destiny had been playing with the Winchesters. Looking at it that way, the crazed psycho theory her parents had wasn't too far off. They were just missing a few demonic details. Because it was a little obvious that he was a walking dead man, Dean didn't go with Bobby to talk to Jess's parents. Instead, he went to the local police department to dig through the official reports for anything that could give them a lead. There was nothing. "So, basically, we have a missing body, and the only possible clue we have is a theory from her parents that we know is wrong," Dean recapped as they sat at the crappy table the motel room provided. Gigantor was sprawled out at Dean's feet. There was a clearly posted "No Pets Allowed" sign at the front of the motel, but given the ugly color of the carpet and the general stench in the room, Dean wasn't so sure that it wouldn't be improved by a puddle of dog piss. "You forgot to add that we have that pleasant sinking feeling of impending doom. We have that, too," Bobby reminded him. Dean shrugged and reached down to scratch at his dog's ears for a moment before leaning back in his chair and slapping his hands against his thighs. "I should probably call Lisa, let her know. Hell, what do I let her know? That I'm okay? That the job isn't going so great and might take longer than I thought? I wasn't even sure how long I thought this was going to take to begin with." "You tell her that you miss her and love her, and you'll be home as soon as you can," Bobby's voice was a mixture of exasperation and fondness. Dean got the distinct impression that Bobby thought he was clueless. Then again, he pretty much was. He nodded in agreement, but his hand paused on its way to his phone.
Bobby?
Yeah?
What if I, you know, I...
Never mind.
What if you don't what?
Love her,
Dean blurted out, and he wasn't sure which face looked more shocked by the question, his reflection in the darkened motel window, or the one coming off the overly shiny and tacky brass lamp on the table. Bobby certainly wasn't looking very surprised.
If you were anybody else, I'd tell you that questioning that is normal. But
you're a stubborn cuss who would never even hint at not knowing.
You'd cut your own tongue out rather than ask questions like that, which basically convinces me that you already know the answer.
She makes me happy,
Dean snapped as if he was defending Lisa's honor.
No, son, she makes you comfortable. She's a great woman, and given a few more months, you'd probably be able to convince yourself that you're in love with her. But that isn't really what it means to be in love with somebody.
Dean's eyes flashed irritation, and Gigantor whined in sympathy to his master's irritation.
Yeah, well, last I looked, I wasn't exactly getting offers for the dream of a lifetime. Maybe I'm happy with comfortable.
Bobby didn't respond to that, but then again he didn't need to. Dean had known him long enough to see the disagreement in his eyes.
I'm just going to go call her and see how Ben is doing,
Dean said as he shoved his chair away from the table. The dog got up as if to follow him, but he waved him away with irritation. The last thing he needed was to have the manager see Dean outside with a forbidden animal while he was busy having a conversation with his girlfriend that he didn't want to have. When Dean came back into the room, Bobby's eyes met his for a bare second before skittering away. Dean knew better than to interpret that behavior as avoidance. He might be family, but Bobby wasn't a Winchester. He could lie like a rug, but he didn't avoid anything. It wasn't his style, and he sucked at it when he tried. As for letting a subject drop, Bobby didn't do that either, except when there was impending doom. And while the grave robbery certainly indicated that peril was close at hand, there wasn't anything to actually do, and neither of them were going to be facing their own mortality within the next hour or so, unless one of them decided to actively try to commit suicide.
How'd it go?
Bobby asked quietly, his eyes still not coming up to meet Dean's.
Great. She's worried out of her mind, and Ben is acting out. She wants to know what is so horrible about this case that I'm hiding from her, and she's wondering why I can't trust her. Somehow, I started the apocalypse, and my brother sacrificed himself to the devil to stop it. Just wouldn't roll off my tongue. How about you?
Bobby shifted in his chair and looked down at the carpet.
Bobby? I may have placed a call of my own,
Bobby mumbled.
And? It's just, we're at a dead end, and you've got a life to be living. And whatever this is, it ain't good, so we best be stopping it now, right?
You didn't do something stupid, did you?
No, I'm not you. There are limits to the kind of trouble I can get into in a seedy motel room,
Bobby protested.
So what exactly did you do?
He called me.
Crowley announced as he opened the door and came into the room.
I'd have come in sooner, but these walls are so thin, and I love to make a dramatic entrance.
Dean whirled around to stare at the not-so-welcome newcomer.
Is that a bouquet?
Crowley smiled at him.
Indeed it is. It's been so long since I saw Bobby that I thought a little gift would be in order. He was quite put out with me the last time I saw him, so I figured that repentance roses were in order.
Dean watched as Crowley walked around him to place the flowers down on the table. Gigantor growled at him as he passed.
Nice dog,
Crowley commented with complete insincerity. Dean shot him a fake smile. You want to tell me why you're bringing Bobby flowers? Or, you know, tell me why the hell you're here at all.
Oh, well, he called me. I have to say I was surprised. After our last meeting, I thought he was through with me. But obviously my sparkling personality must have won him over.
Oh, Lord, Bobby muttered as he grabbed the bouquet off the table, stood up, and walked over to the trash can to dispose of it.
Always playing hard to get,
Crowley said when Bobby turned from the trash can to aim a level stare at him. Hey, not to interrupt the very uncomfortable vibe you've got going there, but I asked a question that I'd like an answer to, Dean reminded them.
Your surrogate father figure here called me about a little situation that the two of you are looking into. I thought that it was just his way of trying to get back together. But it looks like I was mistaken. Those were very expensive roses, by the way. Very expensive.
I liked the shotgun better, Bobby snapped.
Shotgun?
Dean hoped that he didn't sound as confused as he really was.
A few months after you split, Crowley here remembers that he forgot to return my soul, so he decides to show up while I'm helping Rufus out with a multiple haunting in New Jersey.
He's not good enough for you, and he isn't very good looking either. You need somebody more refined, Crowley interrupted. Bobby glared and turned to face Dean.
This Yahoo seems to think that me and Rufus are together.
Crowley thinks you're butt buddies with Rufus? Seriously?
I've been alive. Well, maybe not alive exactly, but I've been around a lot longer than you have. I know when humans are looking for love in all the wrong places. So far, my efforts to woo Mr. Singer have been unsuccessful. But what can I say? If Bobby's got a little flame for old Rufus, well, hope springs eternal.
It ain't hope. It's deluded thinking. And no means no, Bobby retorted hotly.
No to a demon means take by force or keep trying until you wear down their resistance to get what you want. I think it's a very good indication of my overall quality of character that I'm going with the second option,
Crowley rebutted with an almost shy smile. Dean tried not to throw up a little in his mouth.
Okay, first of all, you. Second of all, how about you help us out with what Bobby called you about?
I'll have you know that your treatment of me doesn't exactly make me want to help you, but the nature of your issue does pose some threat to me, so I'm willing to help.
So
I want you to know that I'm not doing this out of the goodness of my heart. I can't have the rest of the demons thinking I'm going soft on humans, especially anybody having anything to do with the Winchesters.
Dean privately thought that trying to get in Bobby's pants by buying him flowers might be sending that message anyway, but he wasn't in the mood to argue with a demon.
Things have been rather chaotic in hell lately. Since your brother managed to lock Lucifer back in the cage, there have been incessant riots and power struggles.
Sounds like business as usual to me, Dean said with his best unimpressed expression plastered on his face.
Oh, but it isn't. See, in your foolish and horribly mangled race toward your destiny, you and your brother managed to kill off major players. No more Lilith, no more Azazel. You even did away with old Alistair. It wasn't such a big deal when Satan was topside, giving away get-out-of-hell passes like candy at a parade. But now that he isn't, getting out of there is back to being tricky again, so that makes the pecking order down there that much more important.
So what does that have to do with Jess's body?
You're joking, right? Crowley asked as his gaze darted from Dean to Bobby and back to Dean. Your brother dragged Michael down there with him. The apocalypse might have been averted up here, but down there, Armageddon is in full swing. Lucifer isn't giving his blessing out to any of his sycophants, because he's too busy trying to blast Michael into pixie dust. But Sam got him down there by taking over. Sam's approval might not be as good, but it would still go a very long way towards getting voted in as Hell's next top demon.
"That ain't good," Bobby stated. Dean figured it was more to annoy Crowley than to state the obvious. The demon had obviously been gearing up to have a stunned moment of silence at the end of his revelation.
"I've taken the liberty of Google mapping the directions from this lovely abode to the location where they took Jessica Moore's body. I'd have just told you the location, but I know that losing Sam has decreased your mental capacity significantly, and your looks are starting to fade," Crowley said as he handed over a piece of paper to Dean. The demon swept his eyes over Dean's body in what Dean assumed was supposed to be a critical stare. Frowning, Dean snatched the directions away and looked down at them.
"Did you draw a heart on this?"
"Just a token of my undying affection. I'd go with you, but I really don't need to be involved in any turf wars." With that, Crowley disappeared.
"Nice stalker you've got there, Bobby." "Shut up. At least he gave me my soul back. I didn't need to go calling Castiel for help."
"Not like he would have answered. Too busy playing Archangel to hang with us mortals these days," Dean said with an edge of bitterness in his voice. Bobby didn't answer that one. He just grabbed his bag and headed out to his vehicle.
Dean wasn't sure what he'd been expecting to find. He knew on a basic level that it was going to be bad, and he also knew that whatever it was that he had been expecting, it wasn't what he found. Then again, that was kind of a given. He couldn't remember the last hunt that he'd gone on that didn't have some disturbing twist or uniquely terrifying surprise. But, yeah, most of his brother's ex-girlfriends chained to a basement wall in various states of decomposition? That was gruesome and nasty and just plain not what he'd imagined. From the choked back sound that Bobby had made, he hadn't been expecting it either. The knowledge made Dean feel a little bit better because he really did love company for his misery.
"At least the demons went down easy,"
Dean forced out as he tried not to breathe through his nose.
"Oh yeah, real blessing that," Bobby grunted.
The stench was bad. No wonder Gigantor had refused to come into the house with them. Dean felt oddly reassured by that realization. He'd been worried that his dog was some sort of canine pacifist or a wuss or something.
"Oh, God."
A soft whimper attracted Dean's attention over to the dark, far back corner of the room. In ye olden days, he would have instantly known to look there, because that was always the place that had the most interesting stuff in a creepy basement. Interesting meaning a really gross substance, a cherubic child, a hot chick, or some random piece of evil luring you to your doom. You could never really tell. Bobby started moving towards the sound first, leaving Dean to play backup. As the whole place was littered with corpses, it was a really nasty job because it basically left him with sweeping his gun and his flashlight back and forth over the decomposing faces of women his brother had fucked. It was not good. It was also humiliating because as highly as Dean thinks of Bobby, Dean knows that he is the superior hunter. Even without Sam, his field skills and youth far outstrip Bobby's. If he'd been on his game, he'd have made certain that he was the one on point, taking the brunt of the danger. Not that Bobby didn't have skills that outstripped Dean's, but book knowledge was a different subject. Dean had never truly been a slouch with that, he just never liked it is all, and he does so much better when he likes or loves something. He also does a great job when the world is ending. Feminine shrieking made Dean hustle faster towards Bobby's location. Of all the hunters Dean had ever met, Bobby was the best with calming down scared women.
He and Sam were ironically both too big and too good-looking. They were cut from their father's cloth. They were meant to be heroes. Bobby was all comfort with his rounded features and kindly eyes. Most people never realized that his appearance masked an uncanny ability to kill in a myriad of inventive ways. "No, please, God, no!" The girl was crying and whimpering even as Bobby tried to calm her down.
"Bobby?"
Dean asked as he turned and put one shoulder against the wall so that he could face back the way that they had come.
"I tried to get her to take a sip of water, and she went nuts on me."
Dean almost asked why he was trying to give her water while they were still in the basement, instead of at least waiting until they were out in one of the vehicles, but he caught himself before the words started to come out of his mouth. Bobby was trying to give her holy water to make sure she wasn't possessed or some other sort of evil. It was another one of those things that he would have known instantly not long ago. He wouldn't have even had to contemplate it. "Dean?" The woman's voice cracked, and he turned to look at her. Her hair was matted to one side of her face, and her arms were strung up tight above her head. Her jawline was purpled and swelling, but he could still make out her features well enough to recognize that it was Jess. He wasn't sure whether he felt happy that they had found her in time to rescue her, or feel bad that she'd had to suffer again because of the Winchesters. He decided that stuffing down and ignoring both options was the best choice.
"Hey there," Dean said softly as he crouched down to look her in the eye.
Without a word or even a significant glance, Bobby stood and turned to cover the room, effectively swapping not only positions but roles with the younger hunter.
"Oh, God, is it really you?"
she asked, her eyes not tearing up so much as just plain leaking.
"Not God, no,"
Dean replied, because his default setting for a tough situation was smartass, and he'd never been good at dealing with Sam's women. Pushing his brother to get one? That was his job as the older brother. Actually, talking to them was a completely different subject. He always felt uncomfortable around them. He wanted to beg them to get Sam laid and not break his heart, but he also wanted to threaten them within an inch of their lives if they thought about taking Sam away from him. All of his issues were moot points now, but that wasn't keeping his instincts from firing up.
"It is you," Jess whispered, and Dean was forced to drag his focus away from his own feelings and back to the apparent damsel in distress. All that domestic living was eroding his hunting skills.
Yeah. Hey, look, I've got to get you out of those manacles, but you need to take a drink of that stuff that Bobby was trying to give you. It'll, give you some protection against the people that did this to you."
Jess stared at him like he had grown another head for a moment.
"You mean the demons?"
Okay, so Dean forgot, on occasion, that Jessica had also been going to Stanford, which meant that she had to be smart and not your typical blonde bimbo trying to marry a future doctor or lawyer.
"That would be a yes," Dean answered with a little grin that Lisa had told him was boyish.
Jess shot a distrusting look over at Bobby, but she nodded her head in acceptance. Dean wanted to smack her in the head for trusting him because she had no more proof that he wasn't just as evil as she apparently thought Bobby was. One short, late-night meeting a very long time ago that happened right before her very supernatural demise shouldn't exactly inspire trust. But her willingness to trust got her to drink the holy water, and when Dean accidentally nicked her wrists with his silver knife while picking the locks to her cuffs, she didn't hiss, smoke, or do anything other than grunt at the pain. She also didn't look up enough to realize that Dean hadn't hit her with any implement that was actually used in picking a lock. Jess couldn't stand up under her own power when her bindings finally let her loose from the wall, so Dean had to hold his breath again as he wrapped his arms around her filthy body and hoisted her to her feet. As Bobby helped him drag the love of his brother's life out of the basement of the damned, Dean was sad to say that he felt better than he had in months.